members of Congress are back in the states and districts for the August recess, and you're getting out and about around the state. I understand you're starting an agriculture tour around the state today.
Yes, sir, we are, and the purpose of that is really to visit with our farmers, see what's going on, the problems that they're facing, but also to try and highlight the importance of the agribusiness. And so we'll be on farms and ranches and agribusinesses, again, trying to illustrate the importance of our agriculture community and how important it is. We've got the safest, cheapest food supply in the world, and that's something that we want to maintain.
Well, I'm sure you'll be talking quite a bit about the farm bill, which is something that's still up in the air. Congress left Washington without coming to a resolution on that. And you are on the conference committee that will try to come up with something when Congress gets back in session.
Yes, sir. I'll be one of the Senate conferees, and we'll be working with our House counterparts. And I don't exactly know how we're going to get it done. The good news is, though, that everybody wants to get it done. And I think most members of Congress realize how important the agriculture community is, how important it is to our state as far as being a tremendous percentage of the business that is conducted in our states. And so we're going to be working really hard. Hopefully we'll get this done, before the time period runs out. If not, have a short-term extension and try and get a farm bill done before the end of the year. It's so important. You know, the name of the game right now is jobs, jobs, jobs. What this does is provide certainty for our farmers so that they can go forward, make the decisions that they need to as far as buying equipment, hiring people, things like that. So it really would be a big boost to the economy.
Now, the SNAP program seems to have been the main sticking point in a lot of the farm bill debate, especially in the House. What's the main problem that particularly House Republicans have with that program?
Well, the farm bill is composed of, as you say, the SNAP program, which is really about 80% of it, and then about 20% actually has to do with farmers. And you're really talking about a lot of money, almost $1 trillion over a five-year period. So $800 billion goes to the food stamp program. And the food stamp program needs to be reformed. And so the Senate did a little bit in that regard, not very much at all. The House, probably will go much, much further. And then the two sides will come together and, come up with a method, a figure, so that we hopefully we'll have some real reform and go forward.
What about the farm programs themselves in the bill? Are there changes there, like cuts in direct payments and so on, that are going to have an impact on our farmers that they're concerned about?
Yes, sir. There are, significant changes, significant reforms, and for the taxpayer, significant savings. We need to make sure that we have a safety net that allows all of the different sectors of agriculture. In the South, we irrigate a lot. The plain states have different requirements, different concerns, so you need to have a good crop insurance program. You also have to, for those that irrigate a lot, get into a system of target prices and things. The direct payments will go away. But again, in their place, we're working hard to put in a system that allows the banks to know that there is a safety net in place so that they will lend to our farmers, but also to make sure that that we're doing the very best that we can in regard to the taxpayer.
I know the August recess is a busy time for you. You're starting this ag tour. In addition to the agriculture tour, who have you been meeting with, and what have you been discussing, and what have you been hearing from Arkansans?
Well, I was at the Grady Fish Fry the other night, and we have all of these festivals going on, and this was this is just Americana, and it's so great to be out and about, visiting. I think the biggest thing that people are concerned about are jobs, jobs, jobs. The economy, is picking up, although we saw that the unemployment rate, has actually ticked up a little bit in Arkansas. Most Arkansans have a job, but they're really concerned about the future. They're concerned if they're going to have a job 6 months from now. And so we've got to get the uncertainty out of the way and do the things that we can to, particularly with small business, decrease the regulation, try and make it such that they have the ability at some point get a fair tax code, those kind of things, so that they can go forward and thrive.
Part of the big divide, though, in our political discussion in Congress is about jobs, the best way to deal with job creation, the best way to do it.
Yes, sir, there is. And you know, we had the stimulus that was almost $1 trillion, and I think most people, you know, in fact, I would say that it was a complete failure in the sense that the problem is when you create short-term government jobs, when the money goes away, those jobs go away. And so what we've got to do is work on the long-term problems. Again, getting a tax code in place that's fair and simple, reducing the regulation. Obamacare really is strangling the hiring ability of companies. When you ask businesses right now, and you mentioned, you know, what's on people's mind, when I talk to businesses, the number one thing that they're concerned about is the increased cost of health care, and so as a result, they're not hiring. We're rapidly becoming a part-time economy. There's so many businesses now that are beating the system by taking two full-time employees and changing that into three part-time employees. So these are things that we simply have to deal with.
What is it exactly that Republicans are proposing that is different from the way things were before Obamacare?
Well, a number of things. You know, first of all, the idea that you lose your job, you lose your insurance, in other words, not having portability, that's wrong. You know, we need to make sure that is in place and goes forward. Becoming uninsurable, again, that's not right. We need to solve that problem. But I think you do that through a free market approach. You allow people with radio stations, you know, that have a small number of employees, small radio stations, my barber with a few employees, allow them to band together. You know, the barbers to band together, the radio stations, whatever the business is, go into the marketplace and get the same deal as a major corporation. The health savings accounts, allowing people to put money aside that is actually their money, so that when they go to the doctor, they pay for it. But if they don't use the doctor, they get to keep it, actually pass it on to their heirs. Those are the kind of free market solutions we need. There has been nothing along the lines of tort reform, getting rid of the nuisance lawsuits. The thing, Mark, that was the problem before Obamacare came in was affordability. Sadly, we're going to spend $1 trillion. We've got nothing to show for it except increased premiums, increased deductibles. And I think ultimately because of this centralizing everything coming out of Washington, 20,000 pages right now of regulation and way behind in doing the regulations, I think we're going to have eventually a system where we have decreased quality of care and rationing.
When you talk about free market competition driving down health care costs, why were health care costs going up before the passage of Obamacare?
Well, again, things like not being able to shop across state lines. I've had the same car insurance, you know, that I've had since I was 16 years old. My homeowner's insurance, I'm free to buy from any company, any place in the United States. We have states now where there's essentially one insurer. So we need competition. We need the ability to go into the marketplace, buy insurance wherever we want it, wherever we can get the best deal. That's the answer, I think, to decreasing cost. I mentioned the nuisance lawsuits and things like that. None of that stuff has been dealt with, and so as a result, we're seeing a very bureaucratic system rapidly becoming more bureaucratic, and costs continue to rise. So, you know, as I visit with people, I mean, it's not John Bozeman saying these things. You know, it's all we have to do is talk to an employer, talk to, you know, the doctor that takes care of you, or your hospital administrator. They're the ones that are having the real concerns of this and feeling the brunt of it. And then, two, the individuals out there that are seeing their premiums literally skyrocket and are going to go up much, much more next year.
Is anyone telling you, though, that they have benefited or will benefit from the health care law?
Well, again, Not so much. I mean, but that's the nature of the beast. You know, people tend to complain that you know, seeing all of these other things. There are people, very much so. You know, it shouldn't be that, as I said earlier, you know, you lose your job, you lose your insurance, and if you have diabetes or some pre-existing condition, then you can't get insurance or it costs a whole lot. That's not right, you know. And so the idea of children, you know, up to 26 staying on policies, that's very popular. That was something that was proposed by Republicans a while ago. So those are things that we need to keep, and I think people really have benefited and certainly have benefited from those programs, and those are things that we can do. But we don't need to spend an extra $1 trillion in taxes, you know, to get this done, and still, you know, still have these climbing. We've got to make it such that we halt the inflation with health care at the rate that it's going.
Well, once the August recess is over, it seems like time flies and you're frantically trying to wrap things up before the end of the year. What can you get done in the time allotted?
Well, the big thing, you know, is going to be the continuing resolution, you know, funding government. That's going to be important. We'll have a debt ceiling debate that will come up shortly after that. As you mentioned earlier, you know, certainly working on the farm bill, we were able to reach a very bipartisan deal that I think is a good deal for students right before we left. So that's off the table now. So it'll really be a lot of things like that.
Immigration reform, is that going to be dealt with?
Immigration reform, yeah, is in kind of the House's corner right now, and so they're going to be, you know, working hard to try and come up with a bill. I think the approach that a lot of House members would like would be to piecemeal it, you know, to get in a situation where you secure the borders first, maybe make sure next that employers are held accountable, and then, like I say, more of a piecemeal approach than the approach that the Senate had. Again, we need a strong visa program for our farmers. We need a strong visa program, period. I have great concerns, though, about the amnesty aspect of that.
Well, there's still we've had a pretty rainy August, although it's nice right now. But thankfully, the rains came in such a way that while we had some flash flooding, there hasn't been widespread or damaging flooding like we've seen in past years. But there's still some concern in many parts of the country about dramatically rising premiums for flood insurance and about property owners who are having to get flood insurance due to a revised floodplain map from FEMA. What's going on here, and can anything be done about it?
No, things can be done about it, and that's certainly something that is very, very important. That's another thing. You know, there's work going on right now among staff and to try and figure out exactly why we're in this situation. The flood maps in some areas are simply not right. That's causing a problem. So we're going to have to revise those. But also, again, look at what's driving the cost of the flood insurance and why we're in this situation. So this is certainly very, very important for a good part of Arkansas, a good part of the country. So we need to work with FEMA and get, you know, a system that is accurate, and then also make sure that we have, you know, premiums that are fair and, you know, suit the case.
We've got a couple of minutes left here. I wanted to talk a little bit about international events going on, of course, tragic events and ongoing unrest in Egypt. And there's great concern about what's happening there and how it may turn out, and about what the U.S. relationship with Egypt is now and could be in the future.
Well, it's so important, Mark. And you know, Egypt is the focus, which it should be, but we still got Syria, the unrest going on there. Uh-huh. I was in Jordan earlier in the year, and right now almost half the population of Jordan is either Syrian refugees or Palestinian refugees, and so real crisis throughout the whole region. In regard to Egypt, it's a difficult situation. You know, certainly the Morsi government was not popular. You know, they were doing things that were essentially unconstitutional and things. So the military stepped in. Now we've got a situation where the military is almost in a mini civil war with the Muslim Brotherhood. And so the question is, do you cut off the aid or do you not? And there's pros and cons in both areas, in the sense that we have a good relationship with the military. We can influence them because most of their training was done in the United States. And yet, on the other hand, you have a situation where you have a military that is harming their own citizens. I also have real concern for the Coptic Christians. You know, about 10% of Egypt is Christian. The Muslim Brotherhood has turned on them now and is burning the churches, persecuting and killing Christians. So it really is a very, very difficult situation. And so, you know, this is a time that I think we need to band together and try and figure out the path forward. But it is difficult. You know, it's just not an easy situation.